It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, 1280 The Zone, and the Zone Sports Network. Hans not available today. But you know what? We go from one NFL player to another. Scott Mitchell's kind enough to join us. Scott, how are you?
Amazing. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Am I allowed to ask what's up with Hans?
Let's just say we'll
talk about it off air, bud.
Need to tweet at him and say, hey, we're thinking of you, pal.
Understand.
Hang in there, big guy. Hey, all right, so Lloyd brought you in with a little kiss. Is there like a walk-up song that you would prefer? Like a lot of our guests that come on, and we hope to get you on a regular basis, we kind of ask, you know, what song they want, what's their rejoiner. I mean, back in the day when you're cruising around the mean streets of Springville or, you know, growing up, what were you listening to?
Oh my goodness, my music taste is so all over the place. I could go with something Def Leppard.
I knew it.
Or maybe Dream On with Aerosmith.
All right.
I'm all over the place.
I could, you know, rock. We're both kids of the 80s. You know, a little, yeah. Def Leppard, nothing wrong with that at all.
No.
Hey, so the reason I asked Lloyd to reach out to you, because you had a conversation yesterday with Alex that I thought was really fascinating, and your perspective on this is obviously second to none because you lived through it, but a lot of people are getting really mad at Ryan Tannehill because he flat out said, look, it's not my job to mentor Malik Willis. We're doing the same drills. We're going through the same things. We're sitting in the same classrooms. Why is it my job? And I remember, because I'm a big Broncos fan, a few years ago, they brought in Joe Flacco, and then they drafted Drew Locke. And Flacco said the same thing. He's like, look, it's not my job. Like, he can be a big boy and put his big boy pants on and study like I'm going to study and work like I'm going to work. Did you have any problem with what was said by Ryan Tannehill?
I don't know why anyone does have a problem with this. First of all, you're hired. You're drafted. You're traded for. You're signed to be the quarterback. Like, you're not there to be the coach. They have coaches who develop the players, who teach them the offenses and the schemes and all those things. And it's nowhere in your contract does it say you are a mentor. It never says that. And look, I had the most amazing mentor in the world, and not just mentor, but mentors. I mean, literally, Scotty, for 4 years, I sat between Dan Marino and Don Shula, and I got mentored like you would not believe. Dan Marino never put his arm around me and said, hey, kid, I'm going to show you the ropes. I mean, the only thing Marino said is, hey, kid, get out of the huddle, right? I mean, he just never was that even, and I wasn't offended by it, ever. I shut my mouth, I opened my notebook, and I sat and just watched and observed, and I got schooled. I got an education. I got something that, to me, is priceless. And no one had to say a word to me.
So, did it have a lot to do? Because I was watching SportsCenter this morning, and RG3's all upset about it. Says, you can't say that. Now it's the whole locker room's going to be against you and think you're a bad guy. And then Kurt Warner sends out a tweet, hey, if you need a mentor, I'm here for you. DM me, and I'll reach out and help. Is it the fact, are these guys upset with the fact that he verbalized it? Because I got to imagine, look, I'm not going to lie. If I'm you, or if I'm, you know, if I'm a quarterback in the league and they, and I've been around for a minute and they draft a young gun, I'm that they obviously drafted him to eventually take my job. So it's not like I'm going to pave the driveway for this kid to park the car in the driveway or in the garage and steal my job.
Nobody in any NFL locker room is going to go, oh, you are a terrible guy for not trying to help a backup. Like, all I know about NFL locker rooms is, can you help us win today?
Yeah.
And if you can't help us win today, move on or move out of the way. Now, there are guys that are backups, and it's different when it's different when you have like a group, like an offensive line or defensive line, or, you know, where there's a lot of guys and you're going to use a lot of guys in a game, and there's going to be situational players. I mean, the only team that has a situational quarterback is the New Orleans Saints with Taysom Hill. But other than that, I mean, teams just don't play two quarterbacks. Tom Moore, who was my offensive coordinator in Detroit, he moved on to Indianapolis and coached Peyton Manning and ran the same offense we ran in Detroit. And the Monday night crew was there watching practice, and the Colts were playing on Monday night. John Gruden was on the Monday night crew, and he asked Tom Moore, he said, Tom, how come your backup quarterback doesn't get any reps? Tom Moore said, if our backup quarterback comes in a game, we're effed. And we don't practice effed. So it's like being the backup quarterback and grooming a guy for the future is nothing in the culture that I ever understood or understand about professional football. Look, you've got it's what have you done for me lately? And there is no future. I mean, it's like, well, you know, guys might get traded because they had a bad practice, or guys might get benched because they had a bad game. So you're not sitting here going, well, let's focus on our futures like right now. You may have a coach that goes, look, I want to stick around for a while, so I'm gonna bring the young guy in, and then I can go to the owner and I can go to management and say, you know, you gave me this young quarterback here, I'm gonna need time to develop him. I mean, that's the only reason someone would ever want to develop a young quarterback.
I remember a story. Jimmy Johnson, when he was at Dallas, talked about a player that he cut, and they're like, well, why'd you cut him? And he said, well, he fell asleep in a meeting. Can't have that right on my team. And like, well, what happens when Troy Aikman falls asleep in a meeting? He said, I wake him up.
Exactly.
Like, guys, you know, your veterans are going to be treated a little differently. There's no doubt about that, especially if the guy can help you win games.
It's not equitable.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, the comment from Kurt Warner. Kurt Warner started his career with the Green Bay Packers. You know, where was Brett Favre when Kurt Warner was this young diamond in the rough? You know, why didn't Kurt Warner, you know, help, or I'm sorry, why didn't Brett Favre help out Kurt Warner? I mean, you have to go through a process of like refiner's fire, some kind of and you really have to go through it on your own. You know, I had a really interesting conversation with Jeff George, who was drafted number one my draft year, 1990.
Yeah.
And I go, I was so jealous of you because you were the number one pick in the draft, and you know, you got to play, and I had to sit and watch. And he goes, you know, it's so funny you say that, because I was so jealous of you, because I was, I wished I had someone like Marino to watch, to learn the game from. But never in our conversation did we, you know, we said, look, regardless, it kind of all worked out the same, you know, and so you just have to go through a process, whether you're with a guy that you're fortunate enough to be mentored by just osmosis, because I'm just telling you, guys aren't going to, they're not going to put their arm around you and say, let me teach you the ropes here, kid. You go through the refiner's fire.
Yeah. I did love the story you told yesterday, though, about how Dan Marino, for his part, did do that because he probably didn't think you were a threat until he started getting hurt, and you played well, and then he kind of shut that down a bit.
Well, that was the beginning of my fourth season. Like he never said anything to me for the first three seasons. So when he got injured and I started playing, you know, there was no expectation for me. No one knew if I could play or if I couldn't play. And he absolutely, I mean, it was Dan Marino. I mean, who, you know, there's no threat to him. And then I start to play and he's giving me pointers during the game. He goes, hey, try this. He goes, this is what they're doing out there. You know, so I do it and it works, you know. He's like, oh, cool, you know. And then all of a sudden I'm AFC Offensive Player of the Week and AFC Offensive Player of the Month. And then Dan Marino stops talking to me altogether. And he's like, and there was discussion at that point that, hey, why don't we trade Marino? We got this young kid and he's playing great and we have value in Marino. And this guy's got a much bigger upside than Marino does at this point. And that's the whole point is like, you know, if you are not helping the team, I don't care who you are, you're not important. You don't matter.
How hard was it as an NFL quarterback to sit back and go essentially the first, and I'm just pulling up your career stats. I mean, you threw eight attempts your first 2 years. And then finally was able to sneak in a little bit in year three and year four. But to be a relatively, you know, high draft pick and to just sit back and wait behind a legend, how difficult and how frustrating is that?
It's hard to explain to people because you go years. Like, first of all, for me, my Super Bowl was the preseason. Like, I was like,
yeah.
Because I had to make the team, you know, and every team, you know, every year, it's like you have to show that you are a valuable asset to the team. So for me, like, you know, and then I became a starter, and it's like, man, just get me through the preseason. I want to get to the regular season games. But when I was the backup, it was like preseason was everything. And then you go into every game, you get no reps in practice. And you have to be prepared, and you go through the same pregame jitters and nerves that the starter does, only you never get rid of those nerves because you're always like on edge. Like you can go in at any moment. And to do that, you know, for a season or for five or six games, it's like, it's okay. But to do it for 3.5 years, you know, 16 games, playoff games, it's so taxing on you, and there's no reward. You know, for a guy that goes and practices all week and gets beat up, and they at least get to go play in the game. But when you're the backup guy, it's like, you know, you just go practice and get yourself prepared, and that's it. And it's so hard to continue that mental focus and make sure you're ready every week. Because when I did get to play, I had been in the hospital the night before. The first game I played that was of any significance, Dan Marino blows out his Achilles, and in a minute I'm in a game. And I hadn't even warmed up for the game, Scotty. I hadn't thrown a pass. I'd been in the hospital, like, just puking my guts out. And
wow.
And so the game I went into was like I wasn't prepared for it, and I played great in the game. But it just, that's the thing, you just never ever know when you're gonna go in a game. And then the other part of it was so hard is I was drafted in the fourth round, and I think there were seven or eight guys drafted before me, and all seven of them got to play, like some of them like from day one. But so all of them had played, and I was like, man, I'm stuck here in Miami behind Dan Marino, and all of these guys are getting a shot to play, and I want to play. You know, I wanted to play. And so to watch that and then to go into every single week, it was brutal. It was so hard, just, and it just played on your psyche and your emotions terribly.
So I've got your career stats pulled up. You probably remember how many touchdowns you threw. probably remember the amount of yards you threw for. I want to know if you remember your total number of rushing touchdowns in the NFL.
16.
I got you here for 11.
Yeah, they're wrong. 16.
I love it. He did have, according to this, he had 4 and 95, 4 and 96, and then yeah, a few more sprinkled in there. But man, you were like a dual threat guy back in the day, man.
Yeah,
look at you.
See,
look
what
at you
we
running.
Had is Barry. We had Barry Sanders, who was not a stout guy. So they're like, well, let's just get the biggest guy we can to, you know, run quarterback sneak at the goal line. Is pretty
there
much what it was.
I can't imagine that's a lot of fun. A quarterback sneak at the goal line or fourth and one. I can't imagine that's fun as a quarterback.
All right, I can write a book on the art of the quarterback sneak. Like it is the worst play in the world, but it's also the best play in the world if you know how to do it.
Yeah. I want to have a conversation with you about that sometime. That'd be fun. Well, Scott, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for joining
us.
Good insight as always. And, of course, you hear Scott Mitchell with Alex Curry every day from 3 to 6. You're the best, man. Thanks.
You got it.